Welcome to Modern Marketeers, the Barclay Health and Finance Podcast. I'm Sam Mears, and with me in the studio today is Jason Spacek, Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City, a.k.a. Blue KC. Jason, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Sam. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you on the show today. You know, we've been working with Blue KC for a long time. You joined the company 5 or 6 years ago, I think.
Tell me
what brought you to Blue KC.
Yeah, so I'd spent about 12 years in telecom out of college, and it was a great foundational experience for me, just learning all about, you know, marketing and how the business world worked. But with all the comings and goings in telecom and the mergers and acquisitions, I just found myself looking for something new, and healthcare has always been something that was interesting to me. My favorite uncle growing up was an OBGYN, and I always thought I wanted to be a doctor, and quickly realized that science was getting in my way. But I think healthcare for me represented an opportunity, and health insurance in this case represented an opportunity to get, I guess, as close to the action as I could without that darn science qualification.
It sometimes just gets in the way.
Exactly.
But so you've obviously done pretty well at Blue KC because now you're Chief Innovation Officer. So how did you ascend to that role in a relatively short period of time?
I think it was just a series of saying yes a whole lot of times. Honestly, you know, lots of different opportunities presented themselves at Blue KC, and I've just always been a proponent of when somebody asks if you want to do something, if you're interested in something, you say yes and sort it out later. And
yeah.
I've been fortunate and blessed to be provided lots of different challenging opportunities, and hopefully have done well enough to continue to get more of them, and that's what's led to the current position.
Well, certainly in this category, there's plenty of there's no lack of challenges or opportunities or chaos. So what are some of the bigger forces you're seeing that are impacting innovation right now in the health insurance category?
Well, I think the biggest one, bar none, is obviously just the rising costs of healthcare. As costs continue to go up at unsustainable levels, I think you're seeing individual consumers as well as group employers willing to make all kinds of new trade-offs that maybe hadn't entered their thought process before. And so that's giving rise to disruptive forces within those environments, but also giving rise to, you know, Silicon Valley startups and a number of other people that are trying to curb costs. So I think that's first and foremost. But I think the other challenge that we typically see, I come from more of a consumer background, and I think the challenge that we've created is as we try to get ahead of this notion of rising costs, we've inevitably made it much more complicated for the end user that has to contend with all of this stuff. So all these, you know, additional deductibles and new copays and new plan types and narrow networks and all these things, while well-intended, have in some cases, while they've probably helped to curb costs, have created a mountain of complexity. And so I think there's plenty of room now for us to walk back against some of that.
Because there's plenty of opportunity and chaos.
Always.
And so it was, what, 2014 when the Affordable Care Act, you know, came into full-blown existence. And I know you guys were, like, running around a lot in 2013 and subsequent years to try to, like, keep up with it. How's it impacted innovation? How has it impacted the business at Blue KC?
I think first and foremost, it's given us a heightened focus on the end consumer, right? Historically, you know, we've always sold to individual customers, but the lion's share of our business continues to be to the group market. And so there you're working through a broker and a group decision maker, which, you know, create their own, you know, nuances in terms of the sales process and how you're interacting. But I think when really heightened the focus of selling direct to individuals, it just heightens that consumer experience element and all that. And then I think the additional piece that it's brought about or hastened the development of is this notion of people willing to accept what I call less for less. I heard a speaker last week at a conference talking about most disruption in industries starts out as a proposition of somebody offering less for less, right? Mm-hmm. So you think about like Netflix versus a Blockbuster, or a lot of the other disruptive forces started out as a less for less model. And so we certainly see that in the ACA market where people are willing to take narrowed networks or more restrictive, you know, product types and things like that for a cheaper price. And so I think we're starting to see some of that stuff start to emerge in the group markets itself as well.
So about 2 years ago, it could have been 3 years ago, you guys hung out at our place for, I don't know, it seemed like 6 or 8 weeks.
Probably too long, right?
Well, what's that old thing about, you know, in 3 days, fish and you know, relatives or whatever. But
right. But
you guys were hanging out, and I remember getting the call from you saying, we're going to do this thing called the Blue Innovation Group. And it was really Blue KC's first foray into sustained intentional innovation. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah.
How'd
well,
that come about?
Really all credit goes to our CEO, Danette Wilson, at the time. I had kind of had a couple of years ago, I'd kind of refer to it as my Jerry Maguire moment, as I was not doing innovation or anything of the sort. It wasn't really happening at Blue, but we had a kind of a corporate strategy that we were working against, and in my infinite wisdom or lack thereof, one day just sort of started putting together a presentation that started, you know, questioning the future, where things were going, some trends I was seeing.
It wasn't show me the money.
It wasn't quite that. But it was one of those where I started seeing things, some of these trends that we've talked about and other things emerging out there, and just kind of wondered, is anyone else thinking about this the way I am? Does anyone else see these things coming? And eventually, you know, my boss encouraged me to share it with the executive team, and it was kind of one of those sink or swim moments. So either they're going to think this is really interesting and thought provoking, or I'm going to be, you know, on the career path here really soon. So fortunately, it was well received, and they were intrigued by some of what was there. But I think Danette, again, her thought was, let's see where this can go, and what if we freed up some resources to just think, you know, critically about some of these things without the confines and constrictions of the current market or where things are going or what's realistic or what's possible. And so she kind of set myself and three others on a course, hanging out down at your offices, to really think differently about the business.
That mostly driven by customer experience, member experience? I mean, what were the driving issues behind the Blue Innovation Group?
Yeah, it was really broader than that. It was the idea was literally just go think differently and come back with 3 to 5 quote unquote big ideas, you know, no pun intended, that look at the business very differently. So we were given a pretty blank canvas to just go hog wild with.
What'd you come up with?
All kinds of fun stuff. We could probably spend the rest of the time just talking about all the wacky ideas that came back. But, you know, we had all different kinds of things from, you know, different elements of the care delivery space we could get ourselves more involved in. We had a concept called Uber RX that involved leveraging Uber drivers to deliver, you know, prescriptions for people. We had opportunities to leverage our Blue KC membership cards, more like an American Express card that got you discounts and all things around the city and exclusive access to stuff. So all different, you know, we were really far reaching with kind of where we went, and then managed to get our executive team to sit through 3.5 hours of presentations as we rattled through most
short
of them.
Feet or
yeah,
small
which
feet.
Which might be one of my crowning achievements at Blue KC, but you know, very, very well received, and they were open to a lot of the kind of crazy ideas we came back
with. So how'd you narrow the opportunities?
I think what we tried to do was focus on which ones are probably more achievable than others, you know, which ones are more realistic. And we obviously had the confines as we started to bring those back in of, you know, time, money, you know, all the resource restrictions that you have. And so really tried to focus in on ones that we thought could have maximum impact, but with a reasonable, you know, execution approach and how you'd go about it.
So you landed on one in particular, and I remember the working name for this was Sky.
Mm-hmm.
How did you land on it? And where is it gone?
Yeah, the idea actually first surfaced in that deck that I had built that I was talking about a minute ago. And unfortunately, nobody will ever mistake me as a branding person because I slapped Sky on it. The notion was this idea of what if you could just do this all over again? You know, we're sitting in this industry that's been gummed up by regulation and all the things that have happened over the years as things have happened. And the thought was, man, that becomes a tough boat to turn. So what if we just took a blank sheet of paper out and started all over. So the Sky came from the notion of what if you had a blue sky to just kind of do what you wanted. And it was this idea of just getting a clean start and how would you do it if you had it to do all over again.
And the board and the executive team gave you the green light, and Sky eventually became?
Yeah, the working project title then became Start Fresh. And so we got a green light to at least start exploring it to see kind of where it went. So it kind of became this take a few more baby steps, take a few more baby steps and keep coming back and telling us what you find out. So we got licensed to kind of keep going and exploring. And that's really when we started working with Barclay on kind of how we start building what became the working project of Start Fresh and what ultimately has resulted now in our market offering of Spirocare.
So with that framework in mind, how did you build out Spirocare?
I think the starting point was really starting with the customer in mind. So this whole idea was, well, we've got some ideas of what we think could work, but let's try a novel idea of actually grounding ourselves in what the customer thinks. And so we started with a team at Barclay with really an ethnographic research project where we sat down with people in their homes for, you know, a couple hours each and really probed into how they live their lives, how they consume healthcare, what they think about health insurance, what works for them, what doesn't. And saw all kinds of, you know, amazing things in terms of how they create life hacks around, you know, the 40-page welcome booklet that we give them. They would cut out 2 pages and staple it to the top of their folder, you know. And then, you know, challenging stories of people who were juggling with multiple medications for their previously suicidal child and how they manage all the providers that they're dealing with and how they try to reconcile all the medications they're dealing with and obviously then pay for all this stuff. And so we really got a sense for how people really consume healthcare. So that side one was really trying to explore the consumer side of things. And then we also started down a path of taking a look at the current operating environment of a health insurer and what are all the operational capabilities required, and then started picking those apart to say, well, if we'd had it to do over again, which ones wouldn't we do anymore and which ones would we still need to do, and kind of take a fresh look at that as well.
I got to believe you hit some resistance along the way here.
Yeah, I think we did. I think it was just one. Regulatory resistance is always a challenge, right? So as blue sky, if you will, as you want to be, you never can quite do it exactly the way you'd want to do it. And then lots of other, you know, just part of the challenge, I think, with innovation as we're getting into it with Blue is you try to strike this balance between you want to be free enough to go think without restrictions, but then inevitably you also need buy-in on whatever you're bringing back. And so how do you find that right balance between involving subject matter experts along the way, but also allowing those folks not to restrict or restrain your sort of blue sky thinking? And so that's a challenge.
A lot of people that are going to be listening to this, you know, work at either Blue plans or other health insurance carriers or providers. If you were going to, you know, counsel someone as they're starting down this path, what would be the one, two, maybe three things that you'd say don't forget to?
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think one is the art of storytelling through all this has been huge, and it's something I really pride myself on trying to do a good job of. But what we experienced here was, especially with our executive team and our board, I kind of mentioned the baby steps along the way as we kind of got a little bit more rope and a little bit more rope. But a lot of that was in kind of telling the backdrop of the story. So some of the things we talked about before of what's going on in the market, what are the opportunities, what are we seeing here? And then transitioning that into what we think the potential solutions are. And so starting to form that backdrop for them, even before we ever had, you know, well, here's what SpiraCare is going to be, here's how it's going to work, here's what the plan design is, et cetera, really taking them kind of along for the journey with us at some level was a key aspect, I think. So the storytelling piece, I think, is huge. And then, again, just kind of taking those bite-sized pieces along the way and not trying to bite the whole thing. And then I think the other piece is just anticipating the inevitable twists and turns that come with any sort of innovation or new development. So we started this out. It was going to be an individual market offering. It was going to have these certain elements to it. And through a variety of things, we've pivoted and shifted. And so I think just preparing yourself that what you start out with isn't always what you're going to end up with.
Well, and so obviously with all the ethnographies that you did and talking to patients, I assume you talked to some providers or at least understood the provider mindset throughout this. Where did that lead you with SpiraCare? What makes it different? How's it set apart from primary care today?
Yeah, I think with consumers, you know, it was really the focus was around how do we simplify this for them, right? It's so complicated today in terms of how you manage this, who's in my network, who's not, what do these things cost? Can I go there? Can I not go there? And so what we really tried to focus on is how do we simplify it for the consumer first and foremost? So how that translates into SpiraCare is the clinics, the care facilities that we're opening up for SpiraCare are all embedded. The costs for those services are all embedded in the member's premium. So they never see a cost for any of those services any time that they use them. So for a member, that obviously provides tremendous simplicity and I know I can always go there and get care and never have to worry about what it costs. I don't have to sit there and go, well, is it bad enough that I should go and pay the $100 and deal with it? They can just go and get the care that they need. And then like on the flip side with the providers, with the doctors, there's sort of this undercurrent, you know, in the industry right now where you're seeing high rates of provider burnout and dissatisfaction because they're kind of being put through the meat grinder. You know, they're having to see 30, 35 patients a day, you know, spend an average of 7 or 8 minutes with them. And so how much can they really focus on that person's care before they got to get on to the next one and keep billing and billing and billing to keep the model working? And so we tried to kind of set about turning that on its head as well, too, where, you know, what if we could free up these providers to truly just practice care? They don't have to worry about any of the administrative issues, all the billing issues that come along with that. And so what if we just freed them up to do what they were trained very well to do, and that's provide care for people? And so in the SpiraCare clinics, again, there is no billing. There's no, you know, the only plans that get served in these care locations are the SpiraCare plans. So we're not dealing with 15 different insurance offerings, which frees up the docs to really, again, practice medicine.
So how did you – so there are no EOBs?
Technically, I think this is where it gets to the regulation, right? But right. I think we technically have to issue EOBs that say $0 on them. So, you know, for whatever sense that makes. We have to be compliant. But again, theoretically, it's nothing for the member to have to worry about because it's always going to be a $0.
So when a member slash customer comes into SpiraCare, or when they have a question, do they call BlueKC or do they call SpiraCare?
Yeah, one of the other interesting things we've tried to do is, again, simplify the experience on behalf of the member. So I don't know about your ID card, but it probably looks like mine. There's probably about 10 or 12 phone numbers on the front and back of it. What we've tried to do with SpiraCare is there's one phone number. So when you're a member of SpiraCare, you have one phone number to call. And that phone number rings into a new role that we've created as part of our concept that we call a care guide. And that role is sort of part health plan customer service rep, part sort of care guide, care navigation, and that sort of thing. So one of the challenges you start to see in the industry today is that you got the health plan trying to do their thing, and you know, we've got disease management and all these things that we're doing, customer service, and then you've got the doctor's office kind of trying to do their things, and their objectives aren't always completely aligned. And so we've now merged the gap between those things, and this care guide sits in the provider's office and in the SpiraCare office, but they also answer the phones. And so their job is to answer anything from claims questions you have, billing questions you have, help you set appointments and all those sorts of things, as well as then navigate you outside of those SpiraCare, the care locations, in case you need services that obviously can't be supplied in the care location, so that you can actually you can have somebody that navigates you. One of the things you quickly figure out is you can't solve all of the complexities of the healthcare industry. So we thought, let's try to solve what we can in the care locations. But those that we can't, let's provide a human to actually help translate and navigate on behalf of the member. And so that single phone number rings to that guide who supports that person on their journey.
Well, so going back to what you said early on in the conversation, one of the parameters that helped drive the innovation of SpiraCare was cost. How did you choose to price SpiraCare?
Yeah, the approach we took was to, again, bundle that kind of – one of the phenomena you start to see out there now is you start to see actually some primary care offices switch to what's called direct primary care, where instead of a traditional fee-for-service model where you pay X amount for whatever service you get, it's more of a subscription-based model. And so this is a phenomenon that's actually gaining some traction. My actual doc here in Kansas City flipped to that model and stopped taking insurance. So we kind of took a page out of that book a little bit, where we could bundle the same services for a flat, low monthly fee, and again, bundle it into the consumer's premium. So instead of paying as they go, it's just now part of the premium. So that's all bundled in, and the member doesn't have to worry about any of that. And then we wrap around that our Blue Select Plus network, which is a high performance network of but narrow it down so it doesn't have anybody and everybody in it. But we get some cost savings because of that, and again, keep a lot of high performing health systems inside of it. And then when the member needs services outside of those care centers, the SpiraCare centers, that there's that single network that they can operate within and get care in, and that's all covered by a single deductible. And so the costs accumulate up to that deductible, and then when the member hits that deductible, they're done. So there's no co-insurance and all that. So we try to simplify. It's quote-unquote free in the care center, single deductible outside of it, and then you're done after that.
And does that deductible change based on the plan from the employer, or how does that?
Exactly. We've tried to create 3 to 5 different deductible levels. Again, trying to keep it simple for our care guides and for other people.
So years ago, I think it was a book that Herb Kelleher was either featured in or wrote called Nuts, and it was about Southwest Airlines. And one of the things that was innovative about Southwest when they designed the company was they didn't consider other airlines to be their competitors. They considered the automobile to be their competitor, which is why they have such short legs on all their flights. So when you were going through this process, how did you think about the competition? What was different and innovative about that?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know that it sounds probably crazy to think about it, but I don't know that we really thought about the competition all that much. I think we were laser focused on trying to deliver a compelling experience and a compelling offering for the customer. And so as I think about competition for us, of course, we always compete with the other health insurers of the world and what we're doing there. Some people would point to say, well, now you're competing with doctors with this, which I would kind of argue that as well, because we're actually partnering with the provider community for the care that's provided in these locations. So these are not BlueKC doctors that are providing the care. And we've had tremendous interest among the provider community of wanting to be part of subsequent, you know, iterations of this and where we're going with it. And so I don't necessarily see us as competing in a traditional sense.
Maybe it's more of a mindset.
Yeah, I think in some ways maybe we're competing with ourselves, right? Can we? In fact, that was some of the conversation we had early on. Is we thought at first maybe this was going to be a separate entity from BlueKC at all in itself, and thought, well, maybe we should try to give rise to our own conqueror, right? So what if we mm-hmm. gave rise to a new health plan, a new healthcare experience that ultimately would sort of vanquish the mothership, if you will. And I think there's still some merit to that, to where, you know, how do we think differently enough about this to where we're customer focused, but in some ways competing with ourselves to create a more compelling offering.
So why hasn't someone else done something like this?
You know, I think you see elements of this. So I mentioned the direct right. primary care piece. You see pieces of it. You see other, you know, innovative health systems that are doing some interesting things. I think, of course, the gold standard always is Kaiser Permanente, who, you know, has a true integrated delivery system model. And it's, to me, it's no secret. You look at any customer experience top list and it's Kaiser,
they're there,
everywhere.
Right.
They're like light years. They're lapping the field. And so, and I don't think that's—
But they've been doing that for a very, very, very long time.
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. And so it's interesting to think, you know, why I think a lot of it gets to be, it's kind of a daunting proposition now, having been through some of it, right? Of how do you truly try to turn an industry that's this complicated with this much regulation? It's been a lot to take on, and hopefully we got a long way to go, but it's a challenge.
I heard, and I can't remember which plan it was, but I heard a CEO speak about the fact that this category has always been more operationally focused, looking for efficiencies versus necessarily sales focused, and certainly not necessarily marketing focused. But mm-hmm. this you know, kind of leapfrogs all the way to customer focused to marketing. So that's a big jump.
Yeah, no doubt. I think with the customers too, it's interesting because I think we all like to think we know exactly what they want. But one of the interesting things we discovered along the way was, you know, I think a lot of times we try to gravitate immediately towards technology to solve the consumer issue. And so we kept going down the path of, oh, we're going to have mobile apps, we're going to have mobile this and technology that. When you start to look at some studies, Deloitte did a study that coincided beautifully with our efforts that suggested what people really wanted most in the healthcare experience was personal relationship with their doctor and their care staff. And so we set about trying to provide that piece in spades because, again, people were saying loud and clear, I don't care about technology if it doesn't mean I get to spend more time with my doctor, I don't get what I need. People really just wanted the human connection in the healthcare experience. And so that really led about the model that we created, the care guide function and all that, to really bring the humanity back into healthcare. And the technology should really just exist to try to make things a little easier. So that was our focus.
Well, and you've talked a little bit about the relationship you had to create with providers. Any pushback at all?
I think we got a lot of questions. Naturally, they were really interested in where it's going, what we're hoping to accomplish with it. But as I've said, we've seen quite a bit of interest in you know, them wanting to be part of it. So I think providers generally realize the world is changing for them, and I think they're unsure of exactly how fast or how slow to go in that transformation. But I think this represents for them a way to test the water, so to speak, and kind of figure out where some of this is going. We're kind of treating this in a way as a learning lab for ourselves. And how do we bring some of the things we learn here back into the larger provider community in terms of whether it's how we pay for care, what the customer experience looks like, some of the tools and things that support the journey. So I think providers are cautious about it, but very interested.
And you've kicked this off in the large and mid-sized group markets. How did brokers handle this when you announced it?
I think similarly, quite a few questions. What does this mean? A lot in the broker community have been you know, focused on this idea of on-site work clinics and things like that for larger employers. And so I think some felt this might be a threat to some of the work they had done there. And I think it could be, but it also could be very complementary. But I think generally the brokers, as they're learning more about it, are really intrigued with where it can go. And I think that really serves. We see the same thing with this over time. I think because it's so different from what people experience today, we saw this even in a lot of our focus group research, where you start talking to people about this, and as the session went on and they started learning more about it, we had people like salivating about this at the end, asking if this was real, is it going to be offered, where do I get this, and so. We probably should have started taking enrollments during our focus group meetings. We probably could have gotten ourselves a good head start. But as people warmed to it, they couldn't believe it was real.
I think if I remember right, in one of the ethnographies, you guys described what basically is the current healthcare system process, where people pay into a pool and you get your share of health insurance back. And as you described that to people, they were like, oh, that's a terrible, terrible idea.
Right, right.
Like, well, but that's actually what we do
that's
today.
How it all works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. When you've thought about, you know, getting the traction that you need, have employers embraced this? I mean, did you run into the same types of issues with employers that you did with providers and brokers?
I think with employers, it's been one where I think we've seen lots of interest in the model. I think with employers, you know, there's a huge rise now with employers funding their own health insurance, right? So the self-funding trend has been going on for several years now. And so that creates some wrinkles in terms of the employer starts to want to know, you know, what is that monthly fee for the care centers and how does this all work and how's it going to help me lower my claims costs and all that. And of course, with any new concept, we have a pretty good feeling it's going to, but we can't definitively point to something and say, well, see, A plus B is right. going to equal C for you. So it's a little bit of a leap of faith on the employer side, but we've really pushed the customer experience aspect of this, how much better of, and I think a lot of them just see it through their own consumer lens to say, gosh, I would want this. And so I think it's worth offering to my consumers. And I think we're going to have our work cut out for us to prove in, though, that we can deliver value, because ultimately it's a nice story. But if we can't deliver savings and something meaningful for their employees, we're not going to.
Is that going to be your primary measure of success that you go back to the board and the C-suite with?
I think first and foremost, customer experience is paramount. I think if we don't win that battle, we'll never win the war, if you will, you know, using a euphemism there. But I think customer experience to me will be where I'm looking, you know, January 1 and in those early days and weeks of, are we delivering the kind of experience that we set out to? And is that meaningful for the consumer? I think if you do that, you start to get licensed now to grow the model and build upon that, because I think we believe the savings will come. There's enough wasted spending out there in the market that if we can better navigate these people, I'm highly confident we can deliver savings. But we've got to create the experience that people are attracted to be able to have permission to go there with them.
So what do you think the overall impact on Blue KC will be as SpiraCare continues to like march forward?
Yeah, if I allow myself to dream, it gets back
you
to
should.
That.
You
know,
right.
It gets back to that. How could we make SpiraCare, you know, the default of one of the times we were meeting on this early on, we talked about, you know, what we'd love this to become is like people start to say this thing like, well, I don't want healthcare, I want SpiraCare, right? It becomes sort of like a Kleenex
of the world,
you know, that it becomes its own verb or noun, you know, proper noun or whatever you want to call. And it takes on the notion of people recognize this as this better experience that they want to be part of. And so I would love nothing more than to see it continue to grow and expand and evolve.
Well, so is it a launching pad for more?
I certainly hope so. I think obviously, you know, there's opportunity to expand the model that we've already created. I think there's lots of opportunities to bring in other services into the model as well too. So obviously it's primary care focused now, along with things like x-ray and lab draws and things like that are, again, akin to primary care. But how can we start to rethink how specialty services work here, right? And I think even with technology now, so I mentioned again, consumers aren't enamored with technology in of itself, but if it can help give them a better experience, they're open to it. So, you know, using an example, like what if we bring in a dermatologist into the model, but instead of having to go set up a separate appointment to see your dermatologist, what if we've got them available via video connection in the exam room and right. there you are with your primary care doc. You know, you've got a couple moles on your skin you're a little concerned about. We can pull up the dermatologist right there in the room with you and your doctor's there as well. And you can kind of have your dermatology consult all there at the same time, right? So again, that's just one example, but how can we start to rethink about other aspects of the industry? And again, all in the idea of keeping that simple for the consumer.
So what comes next? I mean, this launches in, holy cow, 2 months from
months,
tomorrow.
Yeah. I think obviously first and foremost is making sure the many folks back at the Blue KC headquarters are able to get this thing over the finish line, which
right.
again, as you alluded to, is no small feat and really all credit to them. It's easy being the idea guy, but the in terms of kind of the lessons learned,
it really
takes
a
village. Yep. You know, it's easy to again have the idea, but to actually see it through. You know, we talk about this within the entrepreneurial space all the time, but ideas are cheap, right? It's who can actually make them come to life.
It's easier to think things up than to think things through.
Right. Yeah, yep. No doubt. Well said. And so I think first and foremost is obviously is getting those things over the finish line, again, delivering on that initial experience that we think we can do. But then I think quickly it's going to be where can we go with this and how do we continue to drum up, you know, more support and what other angles can we take? You know, what other things can be spiritized, if you will, right?
And so how? Now it's a verb,
right? Exactly. So how do we think about that? You know, as we look across the healthcare landscape and where we can bring it. But I think there's tons and tons of opportunity. And again, but it all starts with doing right by those first members. I think year two could really be a bonanza for us because we had employers that obviously I think were intrigued, but it's the age old. I don't want to be the first one into the right. into the new thing, but
they're going to be the third.
They'll
either.
Be watching closely, right. right? And so if we do well by those first members, I think both in the groups that already are offering it as well as the ones that sat the fence, I think we could see a huge rush into this thing in year two and beyond.
Well, let's plan on reconvening. Well, in a couple ways. One, I certainly want to maybe come back in 6 months, when we're 4 or 5 months into SpiroCare and just see, what you saw in the real world versus what you anticipated from all the planning and research that you guys did. And then also, how do we take this thing forward? Because obviously when you have something like this, it's based in innovation and ideas that really have come to life, you want to see how it matures and evolves over time.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. And I think it's one of those – it's going to be a continuous learning process, right? As much as you think you know out of the gate, we're going to learn a ton more in the first probably 2 weeks of being open than we ever did in the lead up,
yes.
right? Because you're going to get real bullets and real consumer feedback, and they'll probably have better ideas than we ever did on where we can go with it.
So, right, yeah. right. Appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, enjoyed it.
And again, guys, this is Jason Spacek, Vice President and Chief Innovation Officer at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Join us again next time for Modern Marketeers, the Barclay Health and Finance podcast. And until next time, I'll repeat what we said a few minutes ago. Always remember, it's easier to think things up than to think things through. Jason, thanks again.
Thank you.